You know, if you want to understand the deepest values of any society, you can go to a university and study sociology, and you can enroll in a PhD and do years and years of study and very intensive research, spend a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort, or you could just stay at home, sit on your couch with a remote and watch television. Because, and I say that, and many of us, that's what we do, but I say that because these producers spent thousands and thousands of dollars researching what we as a society think is important, what we focus on, what we're interested in, and so they do that. And so we want to take a case study this morning about what is most important to Americans today. What does America focus on today, maybe more than anything else? And the way we're going to go about doing this is we're going to look at about five or six different television shows that's very popular today, and you'll probably recognize every one of them. And I want you to see, and be honest, see if you detect, you know, what the gist is, what the main point is. See if you can detect that. See what, if you can see what they're trying to get us to grasp hold of. The first one is American Pickers. Anybody seen this one? Everybody seen this one? All right, now the top of that pretty much says it all. TV for guys who like stuff. And that's exactly what it is. These two men right here go throughout the country, and they go through attics and storage buildings, and they go through junkyards and everything else looking for stuff that's going to be worth money. That's what they do. In fact, they kind of give a whole new meaning to the word trash television. Because that's what it's all about. How much is my stuff worth? And then a spinoff of this that you probably have not seen is Sister Pickers. Anybody seen that? Sister Pickers. And, of course, that is two sisters that do the same thing. They go throughout the country looking, going through, rummaging through people's stuff, through warehouses, barns, all kinds of stuff, looking for stuff that is going to be of great value. The next one is, for those of us who are a little bit more highbrow maybe than the last one, is Antique Road Show. How many have seen that? Everybody almost has seen that. This show, of course, is about people who have collectibles, antiques, or sometimes just junk stuff, and they'll bring it to this show to let some expert appraisers look at it. And these guys know their stuff. They know about stuff in general. They know when it was made. They know who made it. They know at what time. And this time when it was made, it had this. And you know, they know everything about it. And so they bring them to these expert appraisers to see how much their stuff is worth. All right. Two of the appraisers... from Antique Road Show obviously thought, well, we can make more money if we go alone and do this ourselves. And so they left and they started Buried Treasure, which is the same type show where people bring their stuff, their collectibles, their antiques, their junk, to see how much, and let these two experts tell them how much this stuff is worth. What about this one? See some of you shaking your head. Storage Wars. So this is the new thing, I believe. And I hadn't seen this yet. I would like to see it just to see what it's all about. But I have heard a lot about this. What's behind this door? This particular show, the point is, there are people that are bidding on storage houses that are, I don't know if they're abandoned, or if they load them with stuff, if that's set up. I think they're abandoned. I'm not really sure. Yes. Okay, abandoned storehouses, and they'll bid on that. And so it's my understanding, you know, that some will bid, you know, just a little bit of money, and who knows what's behind that door. It might be something that's worth thousands of dollars, and they hit the jackpot. And then there's others who probably bid a whole lot of money, and there's nothing worth anything behind that door. Last but not least, there's auction hunters, which is pretty much the same thing. That's Gary's show, I guess. He's smiling, nodding his head. Yeah, that's right. Auction hunters, which is pretty much the same thing, right? Where they bid on units, I guess, hoping to hit the jackpot, hoping that it's going to be worth a lot of stuff. Now, what is the theme here? What is the one thing that stands out more than anything else? Material things. I'll tell you what, our song leaders here are really good about asking what the sermon is about to see what songs to lead. If you notice something this morning, all our songs are about how we love God and heaven and Jesus more than this world and earthly things. That is by far the thing that stands out more than anything else with these shows. There we go. America's love for stuff. And we do, don't we? We love stuff. Stuff that so often is not near as valuable as those who possess the stuff think that it should be. Stuff that is most of the time very impractical. If you'll notice, hardly any of these people will bring something that is useful, like a tool or something that can actually be useful. A lot of times it's collectible items and things like that. Stuff that most time an eager buyer will get and they will take it home and do the same thing that the last person did. They'll set it on a shelf. It will collect dust until the next time that it is taken to a pawn shop or to a garage sale or a yard sale or goes to an auction or something. Stuff is what it's all about. Now, if we were to look at these different shows and do an analysis this morning, we could come up with several different things. One thing is we could learn that people like to pawn stuff in times like this. When times are bad and bad economic times, where jobs are scarce sometimes, then people think that they can get grandpa's old furniture, grandma's old silverware, china, and take it hoping that it's going to be worth a lot of money. And most of the things that they bring in are things that someone else has owned and has been handed down from generation to generation, and some greedy grandson or greedy great-granddaughter has their hands on it, and they're hoping, like everything, to get something out of it. Another thing that we could see is the impulsiveness of the American consumer today. You can go at any Saturday, especially in the spring and summer, to a yard sale or a garage sale and see just how much stuff people have, can't you? Including ourselves. Stuff. I'm not down on yard sales. I like yard sales, but you see stuff. I know people that have 2 and 3 yard sales a year. Where we live, you're allowed to have one, right? One in the village per year. And so you go in there and it's just yard sale after yard sale, which I don't know if Steph wants me to go anymore. I like going to yard sales. You can find good deals. Last time I went with her was over a year ago, and it was there where we live in the village. And, you know, just because stuff is cheap doesn't mean that you should get it if you can't afford it. And this guy had 2 awesome four-wheelers. And they're Polaris's. They were on about a 14-foot trailer that looked brand new, and it looked great. And I've got an old 94 model, Honda 300. Old, outdated, tore up, you know. And these were almost brand new. They're shiny. And he was asking about half of what they were worth. And I was that close to buying them. Someone stopped me. I'm not going to say who it is. Someone stopped me. I mean, if you have money, you can make money. I was like, well, we can buy these and sell them and make money. Yeah, but we don't have the money to buy them to begin with. But you can go to yard sales and see how much stuff people have. You know, shopping can be an addiction, and it can actually be a medication to some people. Some people will get down in the dumps, and they think that going shopping and buying something new and shiny will get them in a good mood, and so they'll go to Wally World or somewhere, and they'll buy something new, and half the time it's something that they'll never use anyway, and they'll bring it home and set it down, and it usually never even gets used. And that gets some kind of, I don't know, psychological thrill out of doing that, having something new and shiny, and then that goes away, and they have to do it again. They go shopping again, and it can be a real problem. Well, one thing that we can conclude by looking at all of these different episodes is that we love stuff. Americans love stuff, and we have a lot of stuff. Now, in a day and age to where the average house, I'm not saying every house, but where the average house is bigger than it's ever been, but yet we need storage units, garages, sheds to put more and more stuff. Look at that, 2.3 billion square feet of storage units in the United States, which is more than 7 square feet of storage space for every man, woman, and child in America. That's a lot of stuff, isn't it? That is a lot of stuff. If you were to ask what the theme is, you would see that overwhelmingly that the theme is not just about the stuff, but the question, what is my stuff worth? That's what the high dramatic point of every one of the shows that we just looked at is, when the expert appraiser tells the person exactly how much their stuff is worth. And they'll drag it out, they'll try to make it as dramatic as possible, they'll go to a commercial and keep you wondering, I wonder how much they're going to give him for that piece of junk, for whatever he brought in. And that's the high point, you know, how much is my stuff worth? Look at Luke chapter 12. That's where our study will be this morning, Luke chapter 12. And here Jesus speaks of the abundance of possessions, the abundance of possessions, which describes America today, does it not? Does that not describe America today? Do we not have an abundance of possessions? And he discusses here the unhealthy relationship that we can have with material things, with stuff. And like an expert appraiser, Jesus gives us three guidelines that we can look at to let us know how much our stuff is worth. So let's look at what Jesus says about how much our stuff, our material things, are worth. First of all, starting with verse 13, our stuff is not worth losing our family over. It's not. And there's a lot of people that lose their family over the pursuit of things, material things. Starting there at verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" Then he said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." Now think about that for a second. What's going on here? We don't know exactly what is going on here, because Jesus is asked to intervene, but we do know something. We know that this is a family that is being torn apart by greed. That's very obvious here. It's very obvious here that someone has passed away in this passage. And more than likely, it's probably the man, because especially in that day and age, the man had control of all the possessions and of the inheritance and everything. So someone has passed away. And instead of comforting and being there for one another during this time of hardship and during this time of mourning, they're at each other's throats. They're wondering who's getting dad's stuff, who's getting mom's stuff. Isn't that sad? Have you ever seen anyone do that? Have you known families to do that, where the mom or the dad or the grandmother or grandfather passes away and they're at each other's throats? Who's getting their stuff? I want this. I want that. Surveying, I've seen a lot of that. I've been out on surveys before when an estate has gone up and someone has passed away, and so the siblings are to divide the land out. And I've had brothers come up to me and say, "Well, you know, my brother so-and-so, he thinks he's going to get all of this, but I got news for him." You know? And then he drives off and the other brother or sister comes up and says, "You know, my brother or my sister so-and-so, she thinks she's going to get that little piece over there by the river. I don't think so. That's mine." And it's a shame. And I kind of have fun with it sometimes, you know. I have, you know. I'll just smile and say, "Why don't you just give it to them? See what they do." "What? What are you, crazy?" Just to see what they say. But I have told many people that, you know what, you can't take this with you. And what amazes me is the age of some of the people that are so upset about this. And I'm thinking, you're getting on up in years and you're willing to just throw away your whole family because you want this little piece of land right here. Or you want this, that, and the other. That's a shame. It really is. And that's what Jesus is trying to teach us here. That's what he's emphasizing here in this story, is the danger of greed. Greed tears families apart. When overtime becomes all the time, and you can't seem to get enough toys and belongings, and before you know it, family members are being neglected because we have so much stuff that we've got to make sure that we have time to play with. And it's a real shame. In counseling sessions, we've seen different ones, and I've known of different ones. The woman comes and says, well, you know what? I don't love my husband anymore. I don't even know him anymore. We don't spend any time together. He spends all his time working. And then the man says, well, yeah, I'm working all the time because I want to give them everything, you know. And that's not what they need. Those kids need a father. And that woman needs a husband. That's what they need. And so, what is my stuff worth? Well, I guarantee you, it's not worth your family. It's not worth your family. Just that little bit of overtime, you know. I volunteered for that. I won't do it all the time. You know, it's double time. I can get this. It's not worth your family. Spend time with your family. What's my stuff worth, Lord? Well, he says here, verse 16, stuff is not worth losing your soul over. It's not worth losing your soul over. Look at verse 16 through verse 21. And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Come, take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul will be required of you. And now who will own the things that you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. You know, here is a man that has an abundance, to say the least. He has it just coming out of his ears. He's got so much that he can't fit it all in his house. He can't fit it all in all his storage units and his garages and his barns. And so what am I going to do? I'm not going to quit buying stuff. I'll just build bigger facilities, bigger barns so I can put more stuff. What does Jesus call him? What does God call him? He calls him a fool. You're a fool. You're spending your whole life to get all of these things, and you turn around and you're gray-headed or you're bald-headed, and all you have is things. You don't have friends, you don't have family, and you don't have a God. Because you spent your whole life saving up, working for things. And he's not just calling this man a fool, he calls anyone a fool who is rich in this world but is not rich towards God. You know, we never should underestimate the power of greed, because the power of greed can cause us to lose our soul. Many people, as the passage was read, Michael did a good job reading that, many people have left the faith, 1 Timothy chapter 6 says, because of their pursuit for worldly things. It's not worth that. And Jesus warns us of that over and over again. Jesus warns us, but you know, as preachers, Charles, you like preaching on materialism? I don't. He does. Most preachers don't. They'll preach on it sometimes. Charles don't mind stepping on people's toes. It kind of scares me sometimes. Materialism steps on everybody's toes, doesn't it? Just a little bit. And so not many preachers are going to preach on it very often. Jesus preached on it a lot. He taught it a lot. He warns about it over and over again. Out of 36 parables, 17 of them deal with the proper use of money. Someone has calculated that just over a sixth of all of Jesus' teachings are something about money or wealth and the dangers. 450 passages in the Old and New Testament warn of pride, possessions, and prosperity. And so when the Lord tells us we need to beware of something, that's exactly what we need to do. We need to watch out, because he knows what he's talking about. Now, in all of my years, and I haven't been preaching that long, but I've grown up in the church. And in all of my years in the church, I've seen a lot of people come forward confessing sins. And some of them are very general, and some of them are very specific. But I tell you this, I have never seen anyone come forward, and maybe you have, but I've never seen anyone come forward confessing the sin of greed. I've never seen it. But we've all done it. What's my stuff worth, Lord? I guarantee you it's not worth your soul. When we put more emphasis on the things of this world and making sure that we work all that we can so that we can possess all that we can and have all the little toys and knickknacks and things that this world has to offer, but we neglect the spiritual things, we neglect our church family, and we neglect our God, it's not worth our soul. And there's a lot of people in the church, I didn't say the world. There's a lot of people in the church that are selling their soul for things. It's not worth it. A third thing, what is my stuff worth, Lord? Your stuff is not worth your peace of mind. It's not worth losing your peace of mind. Starting there in verse 22. He says, and he said to his disciples, for this reason I say to you, do not worry about your life as to what you will eat, nor your body as to what you will put on. For your life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap. They have no storeroom nor barn, and yet God feeds them. How much more valuable you are than the birds! And which of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his lifespan? If then you cannot do even a very little thing, why do you worry about other matters? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. But I tell you, not even Solomon, in all of his glory, was clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothed the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you will eat and what you will drink. And do not keep worrying. That's the point. Don't worry. Possessions rob us of that. Verse 30, for all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek, but your Father knows that you need these things. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Put God first, and these things will be added to you. You know, the power of possessions can rob us of our peace that Jesus Christ offers us. When we're so concerned about things of this world, we're so concerned about how much money we make, about what we're driving, about maybe what we're living in. So, you know, your best friend just got a new car, and so all of a sudden your car looks old. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with buying new cars or buying things, but when you put more emphasis on that, I'll tell you what, next time you go to the store to buy something and you got that overwhelming urge to buy it, ask yourself this question: am I buying this because I believe it's going to make me happy? Be honest. Am I buying this because I believe it's going to make me happy? And then go home, don't buy it. If you don't need it, go home and look in your garage, look in your attic, look in your shed, look in your garage, and see how much stuff you have already. And you might think twice about buying it next time. You know, we've got so much stuff in our life. You can't put your money in a trust, you can't put your trust in money. You can invest in securities, but you'll never find security in investments. Colossians 3 and verse 5, Paul here is talking about covetousness. And here he says that we are to put to death certain things in our body here on this earth. And he goes on to talk about fornication, uncleanness, passions, evil desires. And then he says covetousness, which is idolatry. And that's what we're talking about here, to covet worldly things. Why did he call covetousness idolatry? Because covetousness, like idolatry, puts more emphasis and more attention on things than it should. You know, an idol. We look at the Old Testament and we think, what were those people thinking? An idol is an image that someone has made. And that image they bow to and they worship and they say, oh thing, oh great God, make me happy. Oh great God, fulfill my every desire. Give me what I want. And when we look at passages like that in the Old Testament, we think, what idiots. You made that thing. You know, it's made out of wood. It's made out of stone. You made it. It can't make you happy. It can't do anything. And we do the same thing today. We do the same thing today when it comes to possessions. We say, oh, great thing. You know, who makes the things? All the stuff we have. We do. Oh, great thing, make me happy. Oh, great thing, fulfill my every desire. Wouldn't it be nice to have this new thing and the greatest, the newest and the greatest of everything? It doesn't make you happy. For a short period of time, it might, but it does not make you happy. How much is stuff worth? Jesus said, what will a man profit if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? And what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Think about that. What are you willing to exchange your soul for anything that this world has to offer? Steve Jobs, the co-founder of Apple, died this past year at the age of 56 years old. And he left behind a wife, four children, and a $7 billion estate. And the reputation of being one of the greatest businessmen that this time has ever known. Steve got sick in 2003. He got really, really bad sick. In fact, he almost lost his life. And it was at that point that he found out that he was going to die soon. He's not going to live much longer. And in 2005, 2 years after this happened, he went to Stanford University. And he was giving a speech there at Stanford. And in that speech, he reflected back about that time in 2003 when he almost lost his life. And I want you to listen to a quote of what this man says. Now listen to this. This is what the rich man says. This man had every single thing at his fingertips that this life has to offer. Just listen to that. Man, we want stuff, we want this, that, and other. This man had everything. Listen to what he has to say. Once he knows that he's going to die, he says, "Remembering that I will be dead soon is the most important tool that I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Almost everything, external expectations, pride, fear of embarrassment and failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. All the stuff, it doesn't matter. All the things in this world is not going to make me happy. All the belongings, all the material things in this world is not going to fulfill my life, and all the things in this world is certainly not going to get me to heaven. In fact, if I don't watch it, they can keep me from going to heaven." Jesus says, if you put me first above everything else, the things that you need, you'll have them. Not everything you want, but the things that you need. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. If you want to be truly happy, I mean truly happy, and who doesn't? If you want to be truly fulfilled in this life, be a Christian. Live for the Lord, because you cannot find it here in this world. If you're not a Christian, we want to ask you, consider obeying the Lord. Consider giving your life to Him, and He will fulfill it. He will make you happy. If you've fallen away, and maybe you've fallen away because you're in the pursuit of happiness and you've gone down the wrong alley and you've looked for it in a material way, and many of us have, please understand you cannot find it there. You can only find peace, you can only find happiness and true fulfillment in the Lord. If you have a need to become a Christian or to come back confessing sin in your life, rededicate your life to the Lord, won't you come while we stand and sing?